Good morning. And yes, I know it's not Easter. I put this up here for a reason. I was in a discussion about a week and a half ago now with another minister here in town of a different kind of church, and he asked me the question. He was talking all about the things they were planning for this coming Sunday and all the programs and all that stuff. And he asked me the question, a cappella churches of Christ, traditionally, what do you guys do when it comes to Easter? And I said, first of all, there's no HQ, and so no headquarters, and so everybody doesn't do the same thing with pretty much anything, honestly, but also when it comes to Easter. I said, secondly, I think what you will find with us is if somebody else in the religious world does it, we don't, short of meeting on Sundays. And I told him my favorite joke about the Churches of Christ, which is, it's good that we don't know the Baptists going through the front door because we would have to go in through the windows. And I've always just laughed at that whole thought, although it's sad at times too, but I told him we don't really do a whole lot when it comes to Easter, and honestly, I have been to an awful lot of services on Easter where Easter was never mentioned. We don't use the word a lot. I know it's not a word you find in Scripture. It came up somewhere later down the road. I can't remember if I've told you this or not, but I have even been to an Easter Sunday service where the topic for the day was the New Testament method for disfellowshipping. Not here, mind you. By the way, if you're visiting, it was not here. But I remember going through that service thinking to myself, and at one point my wife leaned over and said to me, is someone being disfellowshipped today? And I said to her, it could be me because I don't know. But I went to the teen class later, and one of the teens asked, why were we talking about excommunication on Easter? Which, another story, but anyway. We don't make a whole lot of Easter as far as it being different from any other Sunday, but it's one of those things where the world around us does, for whatever reasons. And it's kind of funny, we'll go on our egg hunts and all that kind of stuff and go to the mall with scary Easter bunnies and all those things and eat our Peeps and our chocolate bunnies and all that stuff in the morning, and then come here and it's just another Sunday. And I get the idea that we celebrate the resurrection every Sunday, and honestly, I hope every day. I hope it's not just a Sunday kind of thing for you. But I will say this, be conscious this week of the world around us, because for whatever reason, they tend to acknowledge Jesus a little more this week than on the average week. And maybe that's an opportunity for an open door for you. And so next week, we will be talking about the resurrection, not because we feel like we have to, but because why not? If we have an opportunity to talk about the resurrection, it seems like a good thing to talk about. So if you have friends that you've thought, hey, I'd like to have somebody come visit, I want to make sure it's an uplifting kind of Sunday, that's the intent of next week. And so I hope you will consider maybe inviting that friend along, maybe inviting someone who has been here in the past and not been in a while. And then from our side, I hope we will be welcoming people. I hope if we see a face that we've not seen in a couple years, that we won't come in with the, well, where have you been? But instead, we'll come in with just some happiness to see folks. Because I don't know about you, but anytime we see some new faces or some old faces around here, it's a good thing. All right, secondly, I wasn't sure which one of these two announcements I was more nervous about today, but here's the other one. Secondly, we are doing a photo directory. Now, if you would like to blame this on anyone, you're looking at him. This was my idea, and I will give you the reasoning behind it, a couple things. One, Denise and I got into a file cabinet back here in one of the offices a week or two ago and found old directories. And we had a good old time looking at old pictures of you guys. We saw Leland with a lot more hair. We saw Norm with a mean mustache. And we saw a very cute young Stacy Tucker that I'm now married to from long, long ago. But it was fun to look through those old pictures, and I thought to myself, I'm glad these are here because I'm seeing you at a different point in life that I don't see you at now. And for new people as they come along, it's good for them to see the history of this church. We had a photo board out here that is in the process of being reconstructed, and we had the thought, or I had the thought, and convinced other people that it was a good thought, that wouldn't it be nice if we had, one, some updated pictures out here, and two, updated pictures taken by someone who knows what they're doing. And I am as much an amateur photographer as anybody and have taken an awful lot of bad pictures along the way, and I thought if we had some consistency in something nice. All that to say this, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, May 7th through 9th, we are planning to have Life Touch, who does a lot of school photography and things like that, come in, and they will do pictures for us. Now, there are a few things you need to know here. Every church I have been to has had a good experience doing this and a bad experience doing this. And I talked a lot to the representative from the company about this, that we are not looking for high-pressure sales here. And he agreed with me, and you guys can hold him to it. He agreed with me that they're not looking for that either. Now, clearly, they want to sell pictures. That's how they make money. I don't care if they sell pictures or not. Don't quote me on that. But it doesn't matter to me if they sell pictures or not. If this is a service to you and it's an excuse for you to get an updated family picture, more power to you. The Lewis family has been very bad about getting family pictures along the way, so we'll probably take advantage of it. But here's what you get. You get to come in and sit down for 5 minutes. You get your picture taken. They will give you an 8x10 of that picture. Costs you nothing other than 5 minutes of your time and the gas to get here and leave and all of that. If you're coming for game night on that Friday, by the way, you're coming anyway. So if you could schedule the time to come in right before that, you're doing well. Secondly, it gives us free church directories, which otherwise we would spend money to do. And so it's a service to the church in that way. A couple things you need to know. None of us are making any money on this, just in case you're curious about that. I don't get a commission. The church doesn't get a commission. There is no money to be made here by us. They only make money if you buy pictures from them. And again, feel free, but don't feel like you have to. It's just here to help us to have new and updated pictures. So that is the plan. If you have friends who might want family pictures done, feel free to invite them along. Maybe it gets them in the building and they see who we are and all of that. But that's what we're going to be doing. There will be more information coming. There will be a link on the website where you can go register online. If you are not high tech or don't trust registering online, you can call the church office and we will do that for you. We'll also have a sign-up sheet out there starting next week. So again, if you have a negative taste in your mouth about doing these in the past somewhere along the way, I hope you'll give it a shot and give us a chance to do something well. And if along the way you feel like you're being pressured, let me know, because they told us that wouldn't happen. So we want to be sure to hold them to it. All right, all the announcements out of the way. I feel like I've been gone for a while because I've been gone for a while, even though I saw you last week. We were gone on spring break and saw scenic McMinnville. We saw Seattle, and of course we made it down the coast and saw some of that great weather CJ was talking about yesterday. If you'd like to open your Bible, wow, that's really small down there, to John chapter 18. John chapter 18. I figured if we're going to talk about the resurrection next week, that we should skip ahead a little bit in the life of Jesus and talk about what gets him to that point today. And then as we pass by Easter, we'll head back into where we were in the life of Jesus. In John chapter 18, we see Jesus is going to be questioned by Annas. And beginning in verse 12, Jesus has been arrested in the garden. He's there with his disciples. Judas comes along, betrays him with a kiss. The guys come in to take him. Peter fights back and lashes out. Jesus even takes a moment to heal the one who Peter lashes out at. And then he is taken to Annas. The detachment of soldiers with its commander and the Jewish officials arrested Jesus. They bound him and brought him first to Annas, who was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, the high priest that year. Caiaphas was the one who had advised the Jewish leaders that it would be good if one man died for the people. And if you want a little context on that, if you'll remember back, and we've not hit this story yet in our journey through the life of Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead. And it's one of these early stories of resurrection that we see. And they don't know what to do, the Jewish leaders, when they see this. And I would like to think that if you have an encounter with someone who has raised someone from the dead, that you'd want to know a little more about that person. You would want to figure out where they're coming from, what power they do this by. And instead, the Jewish leaders are just threatened by it. And at that time, Caiaphas says that it would be good if this one man dies, rather than this becoming more of a movement that moves on and carries on. Meanwhile, the high priest, and this is still talking about Annas at the time, who has spent time as the high priest but is not the current high priest. He questioned Jesus about his disciples and his teaching. "I have spoken openly to the world," Jesus said. "I always taught in synagogues or at the temple where all the Jews come together. I said nothing in secret. Why question me? Ask those who heard me. Surely they know what I said." When Jesus said this, one of the officials nearby slapped him in the face. "Is this the way you answer the high priest?" he demanded. I would imagine the high priest was not used to a whole lot of boldness in answering him. He was probably used to a lot of people with heads lowered, just taking whatever it was that they were given and moving on. If I said something wrong, Jesus replied, testify as to what is wrong, but if I spoke the truth, why do you strike me? Then Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. Now, why is he in front of Annas in the first place? Because I would imagine we're not Jewish law experts here for the most part. But this is not the way trials are supposed to go, because as we just learned, Caiaphas is the high priest right now, not Annas. And so if anybody, it should be Caiaphas. But I think what we find in Annas is somebody who wants his shot. Now, maybe we find somebody who's a little overbearing. And if you're the high priest and your father-in-law has taken this guy before he's supposed to get to you, I would imagine you might be a little annoyed by that. You might feel like he's a little bit out of place in what he's doing. But Annas takes him in, and I think first it's because of something that is known at the time here as the Bazaars of Annas. Now, you may remember a story in the life of Jesus where he comes into the temple, and he looks around, and he sees people selling things. And I try to imagine exactly what that would have looked like. I try to imagine in our setting, because we have church buildings, this is what we do. But what is it? What if, as you enter this morning, there are all tables set up in the foyer, and we're selling things? And rather than having trays that come in with communion today, we have the communion booths back there where you buy your communion supplies as you come in. We have songbooks because we're not going to project. So we have songbooks back there that you can rent for the hour, and there's a charge for that. There's a charge for where you may sit here because we care so much about our guests. We leave the front row open, I guess, so they, if they come in late, they can have a great seat. You had to pay for the good seats. I learned the other day the Eagles are coming to town, not birds, but the band, the Eagles. I'm a classic rock guy, and I am jealous of the idea of the Eagles coming to town, and I probably will not be there, and someone I know probably will be there. And I looked at the price of the tickets, which is why I will probably not be there, and the closer you get to the front, the more they cost. What if we had that sort of a structure here? I imagine everybody would even more so be in the back. But if this became just a sales place, what if it was this morning, as I introduced the pictorial directory, that later when you get the full announcement, you find out that I'm getting a 25% commission on any sales, and they will send me off to Tahiti on a trip if we sell enough? And how differently would you feel about things? And as Jesus walks in and he sees all this in the temple, he is upset by it, because the temple is supposed to be a place of worship. The temple is a place that David, long, long ago in the line of Jesus, decided, you know, we have nice homes. I live in a palace. God needs a palace. And we'd like to build this palace and honor God with it. And so they have the temple that is destroyed and then rebuilt and destroyed and then rebuilt. And here we are. And here this temple is, and Jesus walks in and sees all the money-making going on, and he's put off by it. And he goes out and he fashions a whip, and he comes in and just starts turning over tables and tells them that this is not what this place is supposed to be. Now, the reason we're talking about the bazaars of Annas is, guess who was over all of that? Guess who was making money off the top of all that? This is Annas' baby, Annas' baby out there. Annas is the one making money on all those tables, and Jesus has come in to flip those over, and now Annas has a moment where he can have his piece of Jesus. And so he brings him into question. Now, the problem is, not only is it illegal under Jewish law for him to do what he's doing, but Jewish law, much like our own law, does not force the accused to testify on behalf of himself. And we see this a lot in our own legal system, where someone is on trial and they don't get up there on the stand. And you can make any number of things of it. Some people think they're afraid. Some people think they must be guilty if they're not getting up there. But for most, they will tell you that if the case has been made pretty well already, they don't want to take any chances that it's going to go bad. And Jewish law had that same kind of idea. So for Annas to come in and to begin to ask these questions of Jesus, it's not only illegal that he's there in the first place, but now even the way he's going about it is not legal. And then third, he knows what Pilate down the road, the Roman governor, is going to be interested in. And so he asks questions about his disciples and what they're doing and how many there are, because if he can sell this to Pilate in such a way that Pilate sees Jesus as a threat, then this is how they get rid of Jesus. Then we move on to Caiaphas, which moves into Matthew chapter 26 in your Bible. Those who arrested Jesus took him to Caiaphas the high priest, where the teachers of the law and the elders had assembled, but Peter followed him at a distance. right up to the courtyard of the high priest, he entered and sat down with the guards to see the outcome. The chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin were looking for false evidence against Jesus so they could put him to death, but they could not find any, though many false witnesses came forward. Finally, two came forward and declared, "This fellow said, 'I am able to destroy the temple of God and rebuild it in 3 days.'" Then the high priest stood up and said to Jesus, "Are you not going to answer? What is this testimony that these men are bringing against you?" But Jesus remained silent. The high priest said to him, "I charge you under the oath of the living God, tell us if you are the Messiah, the Son of God." "You have said so," Jesus replied. "But I say to all of you, from now on you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest tore his clothes and he said, "He has spoken blasphemy. Why do we need any more witnesses? Look now, you who have heard the blasphemy, what do you think?" "He is worthy of death," they answered. Then they spit on his face and struck him with their fists. Others slapped him and said, "Prophesy to us, Messiah, who hit you?" He's before Caiaphas now, the actual high priest. And this story doesn't read a whole lot like what you would expect to see happening before a high priest, does it? And I know we have a very different system nowadays, and the thought of the high priest just in general is kind of a strange thing to us. But this is not what I would imagine to unfold in that setting. Caiaphas, the actual high priest, he is looking for false evidence. Now, I don't know about you, but if someone was looking for false evidence today, it's probably not all that hard to come by. If someone wanted to tell a story about you and have some people buy into that, that probably wouldn't be that difficult to happen. If someone were wanting to tell a story about me and have people buy into it, I imagine that could happen. Because people are out to get other people. People gladly practice in something that is not truth but is false. And yet, even looking for falseness, Caiaphas is having trouble finding it. Because Jesus has done what he has done out in the open. What you see of Jesus in public is who Jesus is. There's not this one version of Jesus and another version of Jesus. And for too many people, there are those two lives that are led. There's the one that everybody sees, and there's the one that everybody does not see. And some of our families might be like this. Some of our friends around us might be like this, where you see something up front and something very different behind the scenes. When I first got married, I lived in an apartment complex. Actually, right before we first got married, I lived in an apartment complex. There were 10 apartments. Four nicer, giant two-bedroom ones downstairs, six smaller one-bedroom ones upstairs. They were old apartments, shag carpet, if you can remember those days. Olive green appliances, even though it was the late 90s, they were vintage, I guess, at that point. You could hear everything through the walls of those apartments. There was a guy down at the one end of the apartment building. He was married, had a child. They were clearly rough people. But when they were outside of their apartment, seemed like fairly good people, got along fairly well, talked nice to their kids. They would be out playing there by the apartment building. And one of my good friends lived in the apartment right above them. And he said when that door closed, it was a very different story. A lot of yelling, a lot of screaming, a lot of slamming things around. They lived one life on the outside and a different one on the inside. But people close by could tell. With Jesus, you have something very different, which is he is not someone different on the outside than he is on the inside. And even when he just has his group of apostles around him and is just teaching to them, the things he's saying are consistent with what he says everywhere. And so when they look for false testimony, it's hard to find. And then we see the reaction. He answers this accusation by basically saying, "You've said it. You've said I'm the Messiah, and I'll agree with you there." And then they begin to spit and strike him. And I want us to remember again, this is the high priest, and we're going to assume a lot of Jewish leadership there, the Sanhedrin there, other religious people there, because why wouldn't they be? Try to imagine this in our context. The elders and I will meet tomorrow morning. We meet the first, third, and fifth Mondays. Fifth one's when they run around. We'll sit down with coffee. We'll talk about church stuff. Tomorrow we'll do a lot of praying. I try to imagine if we brought someone in there who's in the midst of some sort of sin, and this being what happened. You come in there and we have accused you of something, and when you confess to it, our reaction is striking people, spitting on them. Crazy, isn't it? And yet this is where the religious leaders at this time find themselves, which shows you how far they have gone. Because they didn't start here. Now, clearly there is something within them that is okay with this, or they wouldn't have gotten here in the first place. But they didn't begin here. They have, through the ministry of Jesus, watched what he did, the same things everyone else watched and were amazed by, the same things everyone else watched and were drawn to him because of it, and instead they see something different. You look at the world around us, who will look at Easter next week, and to some of them it means something, and some of them it doesn't. And a lot of them look at church in this way. Now, I think they would be shocked to think that if they came in to visit next Sunday, someone would spit on them or strike them. But I think they're going to walk in assuming that there's judgment of some kind. They're going to walk in assuming that we think we're better. And I know we don't. But man, it's hard to overcome that, isn't it? It's hard to overcome this thing that has been set out there that people assume Christianity is. And in this case, what you see the religious leaders actually doing. They want so badly for their version of truth to be true that they're not willing to see truth when it comes their way, which leads us to Pilate. Then the Jewish leaders took Jesus from Caiaphas to the palace of the Roman governor. By now it was early morning, so he's gone through this all night long. Not on a full day of rest, not fully prepared for what's coming, although he spent a lot of time in prayer leading to it. They took him to the palace of the Roman governor. It was early morning. To avoid ceremonial uncleanliness, they did not enter the palace because they wanted to be able to eat the Passover. So Pilate came out to them and asked, "What charges are you bringing against this man?" They are using the system. And again, I hope we would never do this kind of thing today, but they are using the system to get done what it is they want done. And they know that they can't do it on their own, so they take him to Pilate. And they're so clearly using the system that they don't even want to enter the room because they don't want to be unclean. So they take him to Pilate. Pilate asks, "What charges are you bringing against this man?" And Pilate said, "Take him yourselves and judge him by your own law." "But we have no right to execute anyone," they objected. This took place to fulfill what Jesus had said about the kind of death he was going to die. I'm sorry. We're going backwards here. Apologize. The scripture reference at the top is wrong. Where we're at is right. We're still in Matthew 26. Pilate said, "Take him by yourselves and judge him by your own law." "But we have no right to execute anyone," they objected. This took place to fulfill what Jesus had said about the kind of death he was going to die. Now, if they know they have no right to execute, should they be executing? Should the fact that someone else is doing this on their behalf be okay? Or are they just looking for a loophole to get through, to get what done, what they want done? Pilate then went back inside the palace, summoned Jesus, and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" "Is that your own idea?" Jesus asked, "or did others talk about me?" Because why would Pilate know or care about any of this? Pilate was a Roman. He's just there kind of in function. He doesn't really care about what anybody else is doing when it comes to the Jews, as long as it's not getting out of hand. And yet this idea has been floated to Pilate. "Am I a Jew?" Pilate replied. "Your own people and chief priests handed you over to me. What is it that you have done?" And I wonder, as Pilate is watching all this, must he look at all of them and think, "Get yourselves together, people. I mean, this is your system. You've got your high priests. You've got your Sanhedrin. Can you not handle one man? If he is not who he says he is, should this not be very easy for you to handle without even involving me?" How much do you think the world around us might look at us and just want to say to us, "Get yourselves together"? There's so much infighting going on, so much disagreement going on, so much frustration going on within family. And they look at us and they think, "Well, I don't need that. I've got enough of that already." And Pilate looks at them and says, "Why can't you handle this? Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders, but now my kingdom is from another place." "You're a king then," said Pilate. Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. In fact, the reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." And then we start to get to the root of what all this is about. "What is truth?" retorted Pilate. With this, he went out again to the Jews gathered there and said, "I find no basis for a charge against him, but it is your custom for me to release one prisoner at the time of the Passover. Do you want me to release the king of the Jews?" They shouted back, "No, not him. Give us Barabbas." Now Barabbas had taken part in an uprising. What is truth? And if there is a question that is timely, that's the one. What is truth? And is that not what our world just goes in circles searching for all the time? Now, I think a lot of our world has come to the answer that there is no truth. Everything is just a different perspective. There is nothing that is always true. There is always a situation that will change things. And Jesus said that I have come to bring truth. And so if he came to bring truth, then there is truth to be found. And I hope that we can find it here. It's interesting to me that as you look at all of these folks who are putting Jesus on trial, Pilate seems the most rational, doesn't he? I mean, I know he's not exactly perfect in his judgment. I know he doesn't do everything the right way. I know at times he just seems kind of weak, but at least he's asking the right questions. What are the charges here? You've brought this guy. Clearly you want something done with him, but why? What is the real issue here? And then what is truth? Now, he doesn't want anything to do with this. He wants them to settle their own mess. He doesn't want to get involved. He would rather this thing take care of itself. But he is being used by the Jewish leaders because they need something that he can do. And he is, at his heart, it seems to be searching for truth. And the irony of the whole situation is truth is standing right in front of all of them at each step along the way. Now, as we look at these trials, it strikes me that if we were to take the names out and the settings out and say, here are these three moments of trial that Jesus encounters, tell me the one that has something to do with religious leaders. Tell me the one that has something to do with the way God would want things to be done. I think you'd probably look at all three and say they all fall short in one way or another. But if I said, which one of these makes the most sense? Which one of these is the best example of how this trial should take place when it comes to the laws of God? You would probably end up at Pilate, which is frightening. Because Pilate, you want to throw an Old Testament in front of Pilate? He's not going to know a whole lot of what's going on. And what he is going to know is just going to be bits and pieces that have fallen around him that he has witnessed things happening. He's not an expert in the law of the Jews. He's not an expert in the prophecy of the Jews. He knows enough to kind of know what's going on, but he should not be the one running this thing the way it should be run, and yet he comes closer than anyone. And here is Jesus in the midst of all of it, answering to all these people who are part of a world he created, answering all these people who have fallen short in places that he has not, realizing that he does bring truth to the world and that there really aren't a whole lot of people in this setting that are involved in knowing what truth is. And knowing that for the last 3 years of his life, he has openly lived truth that would answer any question that's being asked if people would just take the time to listen. And that's the struggle we find ourselves in this morning, is the willingness of our world, and sometimes even of us, to listen. To listen to what it is that Jesus tells us to do, to listen to what it is God has created us to be, to see him working in our world. I love CJ's thought during communion this morning of these blessings that God has provided us with. Because so many times, I don't know that we walk out the door and think of that first in the morning. So many times, I think we're just happy there's a nice day there and it's not another rainy day. But do we think about the fact that God is here in all of it? God, from the very beginning, has set things in motion that have led to the moment where his son stands in front of people who are not worthy of him, and yet think they are so much greater than him, and just desperately want to trap him and get him out of the way so that they can go on with life. Because they feel like that is an easier life. And that is the world in which we live. The world around us would say a life that doesn't have to deal with the stuff that we're trying to deal with is an easier life. And God would say, no, you've got that whole thing reversed. Because in John 10, he says to us that he has come to give us life and life to the full, or life more abundantly, depending on your version. And so if we are to believe what he says, then the life that is good, the life that is whole, the life that is everything that it could be, is the life that is with him, not the life that is against him. And that is the message that our world needs today. The life that he offers is so much greater. And instead of looking for the flaw in it that these people want desperately to find, and when they don't find it, they just bring in false witnesses and false testimony. Instead, like Pilate, in this one moment of clarity, we should be searching for truth and knowing that the truth is here. God loved us enough that he sent his son not just to live here, not just to die here, but to go through something like this, to have to answer the questions of people that just don't get it, and yet patiently going along with this process because he wants us to be with him one day. This morning, if you are not with him, if you find yourself sometimes in the role of questioning, if you find yourself sometimes in the role of seeing things a better way than his way, then he wants you to come back. If you've not taken him on in baptism, he would like to see that happen again. Last week was a great week as we saw someone added to our body. And he would like to see that kind of thing happen week after week after week as more and more people decide to follow him in this life. Or if you are following him and you have gotten off track, I think of these religious leaders. They did not set out to be against God. They clearly took some missteps along the way, but that was not where they set out to go. And it's very easy to get on that wrong road. And if you find yourself on that wrong road, today is the day you can change that. Or if there's just something we can pray about in your life, something you would like to let the family know about, whatever needs you may have, please come as we stand and sing.